Good morning. Welcome to this Tuesday morning zine, Pandora's Box, the other side of the story on your health and the environment. This is Joni Trussell, and today I'm here with Dr. Rebecca Clausen, who will be giving us updates on genetically modified foods. Dr. Clausen teaches sociology and environmental studies at Fort Lewis College. Her research focuses on the transformation of global food systems. She recently completed a book manuscript addressing the social consequences of fish farming and the future of genetically modified food. Welcome to the show, Becky, and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks so much for covering this topic.
Sure. So I thought we could begin with you talking a little bit about what it is about genetically modified foods. Since part of your research is about the transformation of global food systems, and genetically modified foods have been talked about as something that will help the global food market.
Sure. Well, as a sociologist, my research into global food systems really tries to look at the context in which these new developments unfold, the political, economic considerations, cultural ideologies. So where I really start in my research is looking at how GMOs are a part of a much larger system of the modern industrial agriculture, in that they are, I argue, produced primarily in the context of food as a commodity with a purpose of profit. So I don't see that health and environmental impacts or environmental benefits have really driven the development of GMOs. What I see is that they reduce input, speed up production processes, things that that allow businesses to grow and profit. And because of that, I think there's two primary problems, in that for our health, it's the uncertainty factor, and for the environment, it's the unintended consequences. And there's a third category, the social consequences, that I'd like to just give a little attention to as well. But first off, with the uncertainty, we've seen, humans are fairly adaptable, but we've seen over history when you introduce new foods, there are certain groups that respond in ways we could never predict. For example, we think of complex carbohydrates into Native American populations and diabetes epidemics. So there's this high degree of uncertainty with our health, public health, our individual health. Researchers have suggested complications with allergens, with toxins, with antibiotic resistance, digestive disorders. There's a fairly wide array of potential areas for uncertainty of how this will unfold in the human body. And I think the technology has far surpassed the ethical and the medical studies to really have a sense of security that this would be a positive direction for our food supply to begin genetically altering the foods that we eat. In the environmental realm, the realm of the natural world, I think a primary concern is that of the unintended consequences, where what we do to one plant or to one seed we may be able to study that very specifically in a lab, but once it's introduced to the whole web of life, we're beginning to see how this unfolds in ways that were never intended, and then unfortunately are really harmful to the whole food web. We see a loss of biodiversity, where we begin to just rely on a very narrow spectrum of seeds, of genetics to be the base of our, soy or corn, vegetable products, and we begin to lose that diversity of all the other culturally and historically important plants that people relied on. We see the increased use of herbicides, unfortunately, when we create a plant that is resistant to an herbicide through genetic modification. It means that you can apply more of that pesticide. That affects freshwater systems, runoff, fisheries. It also begins to create weeds that are resistant to that herbicide. So again, an unintended consequence, and one that creates more problems, now having these super weeds that in fact Roundup Ready and these other herbicides won't impact. In the natural world, we see the unintended consequences to non-target species, meaning if a plant produces its own toxin to kill a pest that might eat it, that toxin might drift off into other plants and affect butterflies, for example, monarch butterflies that rely on milkweed. They're finding that perhaps the corn that kills the pest can also affect these non-target species such as butterflies. So the uncertainty of what it does to our body, the unintended consequences of how it unfolds in the natural world, we see those as primary cause for concern of genetic modified foods. Being a sociologist, again, I try to think of it in a larger context as well as what the social consequences might be, and that looks like a loss of traditional ecological knowledge about farming and fishing as food becomes patented and we begin to see intellectual property rights take hold over seeds. It reduces the cultural diversity of what the human population can offer as far as knowledge about local and regional, you know, weather, seasonality, adaptability of plants. In the fisheries, the area that I study, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified salmon, introducing that has the potential to really de-skill the workforce, people that know how to run boats and read the tides and the storms or the migrations of salmon when fish can be, you know, purely grown in a tank through genetic modification. We lose a lot of the collective knowledge that's embedded in these labor systems.
So we're going to take a little break right now. If you're just tuning in, this is Pandora's Box. I'm here with Dr. Rebecca Clausen, and we're talking about genetically modified foods. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Pandora's Box. This is Joni Trussell. I'm here today with Dr. Rebecca Clausen, and we're talking about genetically modified food. And you were just speaking about genetically modified salmon, and I wonder if you could say a little bit more about how that's going with the genetically modified salmon and how widespread it is.
Sure. Well, it is a proprietary fish known as the Aqua Advantage salmon. It would be the very first animal that has been genetically modified for human consumption. We know that, you know, many of the plants that we eat have been genetically modified, but this approval, FDA approval of the Aqua Advantage salmon, this proprietary invention, would be the very first animal that would be on our store, on our, you know, supermarket shelves. Now, it hasn't been officially approved yet by the FDA, but it's all signs are pointing that it will be getting the green light. Back at the end of last year, the FDA released a report that said there's no significant impact of the Aqua Advantage salmon, and that's kind of a signal, a marker, that it looks like it is very certain to pass. The Aqua Advantage salmon, you know, it is an invention. It has the two different species of fish genes inserted into it so that it grows faster, again, increasing the rate of return on the product for the business that's growing it. It is expected that when it is approved, it won't be labeled. There's nothing the FDA is reviewing right now that suggests once it is approved and it's down at the grocery store, you would know if the salmon you're buying has been genetically modified or not. So that's a real concern, of course, for consumers to not even be able to make an informed choice. The Aqua Advantage salmon, there's the health impacts we don't know about. There's the unintended consequences of what if it were to escape into wild fish systems, the amount of food that it takes to grow this fish. You have to grind up a lot of little fish in the ocean to feed the big fish. So, in fact, it's increasing harm to global marine fish systems. But the work on the ground by consumers, by safety advocates, by environmentalists, has been to try to get commitments from grocery stores to not carry the salmon if it were, you know, when it does come out. So that's been mostly on the ground organizing right now. There's two big chains, Safeway and Kroger, that have you know, it's not a hard and fast guarantee, but as of now anyway, they have said that they won't carry it if and when it is to hit the market. Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, they've also committed to not sell it.
So, which brings us to the last part of the show that I'd like to cover is a little bit more about genetically modified labeling and the ballot initiative that's happening right now. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, this is a prime time for all listeners to tune into the labeling issue because it is likely to be on the ballot in this November for our state. Right now, the petitions are being printed for people all over the state to begin trying to collect signatures of Colorado residents that would like to see our food labeled. It's called the Colorado Right to Know Act. And it means that food that has been genetically modified would have the words produced with genetic engineering on the label so that consumers can make an informed choice about what they would like to buy. So the next few months, the campaign is really going to be ramping up here. There is a state chapter called righttoknowcolorado.org, and that's where anybody that wants to get involved with you know, getting petitions or just staying informed on what's happening with the campaign. They have a great website, and they can send out, you know, email reminders if you want about what's happening. So it's, you know, it's something I think this country is ready for. Over 60 countries in the world have laws requiring GMO food to be labeled. Maine and Connecticut have passed them, although they won't go into effect until other nearby states as well sign on. But I think, you know, we're just seeing a real momentum building here in our country for people wanting to know and make an informed choice about the food they eat.
So, and this is ballot initiative number 48 that I recently read about, and I'm wondering how somebody can go about getting their signature onto this ballot initiative.
Sure. Well, right now, the group Right to Know Colorado, they are holding trainings for people that would like to be the petitioners, meaning if you would like to help out by standing, you know, at a grocery store or talking to your social network, friends, family about signing on. So they're training people to collect the signatures because there's a, you know, of course, a pretty specific process there of having the exact names and addresses and such. And then the petitioners should be hitting the ground here shortly. I know the natural grocers have agreed to have people petition in front of their stores. It might be a good idea to just check with local grocery stores to see if they would be willing to have people collect signatures. But right now, since it's just ramping up, the best thing listeners could do would be go to the website, Right to Know Colorado, and that's where they have almost weekly updates on where the campaign is heading. And hopefully with enough signatures, it will be on the ballot in November, and Colorado residents can weigh in on whether they'd like to know if their food's been genetically engineered.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Becky, for talking to us today. That's Dr. Rebecca Claussen. This is Pandora's Box. We've been talking about genetically modified foods, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another Pandora's Box.
Thank you.